The following podcast is broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, this is Tasman Report, a production of the Tasman District Council. And in this edition, bird flu. Where are we at in terms of readiness? We've got a great example of how community board advocacy works, and Plan Change 81 submissions are now open. And this is probably a great place to start. We've got submissions for Plan Change 81 open until Monday the 3rd of August 2026. That's for Plan Change 81 Urban Development and Change 1 to the Tasman Regional Policy Statement. I asked Jeremy Butler, Team Leader, Urban and Rural Policy, what is the Plan Change trying to address?
We've been working with the people of Tasman for over 3 years now to address a couple of problems or challenges as we move forward for the next 10 years. The key things we're trying to address are providing enough houses, having that quantity of homes for firstly the people that are wanting to come here. We have an ageing population, people want to come here. And secondly, the people who are growing up here, the people who live here and maybe young at the moment and they want to be able to buy a home here. We need enough homes for that growth into the future. The second aspect is around the variety of homes, having enough homes so that whatever age and stage you're at, whether you're a young couple, whether you're a family, whether you're an older aging person, you can choose the home that's right for you. And that might be smaller homes, one and two bedroom, duplex, terraced homes, just a much greater variety of homes. And then lastly, we are thinking about the business requirements as well. So have we got enough industrial land? Have we got commercial land, retail? Are they in the right locations for people so they can have jobs that are nearby, and residents of Tasman have got the services that are important to them within easy access.
To find out whether your property is a part of this, Tasman Resource Management Plan online is the place to go to. Can you tell us about that process?
Yes, absolutely. So go to Shape Tasman website and then click on Plan Change 81, and then you'll see a really obvious link through to the Tasman Resource Management Plan online. And that's our online platform for all our planning rules. If you go into that, you'll be able to see a box where you can put your address in, pop your address into that, and it'll zoom you straight to your location. And then you'll be able to see if Plan Change 81 is proposing any changes for your property. And if there are any changes proposed, then you'll be able to see what those are. And it could possibly be a rezoning, or there could be changes to zones or planning layers nearby to you within your neighbourhood. So go on, have a look, and take the opportunity to have a look around as well. And you'll see if there's anything that you'll be aware of.
And from that point, you can then make a submission if you want to.
Absolutely. So then if there is anything you want to tell us about and have your say on, put a submission in. That can be done through an online platform where you can find the parts of the plan that are of importance to you. It could be the map. Put in what your position is, what your opinion is, what you'd like to see happen or change. And submit that in, and it'll go into our planning process.
Jeremy Butler, Team Leader, Urban and Rural Policy, telling us about Plan Change 81, for which submissions are now open. Links are in the show notes. Australian authorities recently confirmed that bird flu variant H5N1 had arrived on their west coast. Behind the scenes in Aotearoa, there's been considerable investment in time and resources to make sure we are prepared. At the forefront of this work are national and local biosecurity teams. Here in Tasman, that's being led by Guinevere Coleman, our marine and terrestrial biomanager. Just before we talk about bird flu, I asked Gwynnie about the role of biosecurity.
Biosecurity, it is a big thing around the world. Biosecurity impacts every part of our life, so it depends on what your focus is in the country. We're an island, and so we try and keep ourselves really safe from lots of things coming in around the world. But the likes of Australia, they have huge biosecurity issues as well, and it depends what you're trying to protect. A lot of the time it's protecting agriculture, traditionally has been agriculture. All these new pests. We have something like 24,000 potential pests knocking on our door coming into New Zealand that MPI is trying to keep out. So it's always being vigilant, and these sorts of things can come out of nowhere, like bird flu, they're new things that suddenly appear, and it is the role of biosecurity and the biosecurity system across the world to try and manage these.
Turning our attention to Tasman, what is our state of bird flu readiness?
For us, things haven't changed yet. We're still in alert level 1, which means we're on a watching brief. We are waiting to see for advice from MPI, but basically once it reaches Australia, we start watching whether the birds that migrate from Western Australia into New Zealand might be at risk.
Okay, because that is a really good point, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about big distances. We're talking about different migratory patterns for birds. And so just because something happens in one part of the world over on the other side of the continent does not mean things are going to spread like flash.
Correct. So birds travel north-south. So a bird that is in the sub-Antarctics is a bigger risk. If it reached sub-Antarctics, we would be on a higher alert. The birds that would bring it from Western Australia are birds such as gannets, and they aren't going to start moving just yet. So they're the ones that are going to come in our breeding season, which is sort of September-ish.
Okay, let's focus now on Tasman. I know because I've been involved with you, we've been doing a lot of preparatory work for if this does happen here at its various stages as well, because around the world there's been high impacts, and then in other places, like I understand in Hawaii, I think it just sort of like literally blew through, though you hadn't seen it, there was very little impact. I guess we're dealing with a number of different scenarios, aren't we? It's a bit hard to pick one or the other.
We don't know how this is going to respond in New Zealand. Our native species could be quite resilient to the bird flu that's coming, so they could have a natural immunity, and they don't tend to hang out together. In the way that flocks get impacted, and so we're likely to see bird flu hit in seabirds where we see large flocks. We're likely to see it impact chickens where we see large flocks, and the rest we don't know. It's quite unpredictable, and it has behaved in different ways around the world. So places like Scotland has seen a big impact on their native birds. Places like the Americas have seen more of an impact on their cattle, and yeah, the likes of Hawaii have seen nothing.
It is a natural thing, isn't it? I mean, this has not come out off another planet.
Wild birds have flus, and that is common, and what is different about this is that the flu has jumped from wild birds into chickens, and then it has proceeded to just mutate and become very, very it's able to spread really quickly and causes really high disease. And so this is an example of a flu that was not controlled right at the beginning when it jumped into chickens, and so therefore it's just a really nasty version of a common bird flu.
So preparations wise, it seems to me as though we're covered. There's four different phases to this, isn't there? There's the awareness that could be coming, we've got it, we're having to deal with it, and then we are having to live with it. Just give us a brief overview of how we're prepared to handle this in Tasman.
For Tasman, we have a preparation plan, which is basically all the people we think might need to be involved inside of council. So are we going to need to manage large amounts of waste potentially? So our waste teams are involved. Our comms team, in terms of supporting our local people to know what to do. We're working closely with DOC and iwi to make sure that we have a coordinated response across council and across Tasman. And we also include the likes of Fish and Game, who have a really good insight into what's going on out there with fishermen, and our local health teams, who will be looking out for human health.
So at various stages, if this does occur, we will be asking people to do certain things. But overall, the big thing is, if you see birds, three or more, they don't look too good, just get on the 0800 number, and if you can, take a photograph so you can send it through, but do not touch the birds, leave them alone.
If you see something, pick up the phone, take good photos, but yeah, the risk for this particular flu is it can jump to people. It's unlikely, but you know, good hygiene will keep you safe, but we really would like, you know, birds to just not be touched, and especially if they are sick looking, because birds can recover if they're left to their own devices. But the stress of being handled by a human is what's probably going to kill them.
And I just want to give a shout out here to the whole of the country, because we've got a big operation going on with all the government agencies, other local government all around the country. We're all well networked in here. And that's taken a bit of preparation, but it's in place.
That's right. All working together, all trying to solve the same problem. I feel like we're well prepared.
That was Gwynnie Coleman, our Marine and Terrestrial Biomanager. And links in the show notes for news and preparedness information about bird flu, or go to TDC online and put the words bird flu in the search box. Tasman District Council has adopted its annual plan for 26-27, enabling rates to be set for the next 12 months at a rates revenue increase of 9.9%. In the council chambers Thursday 25 June before voting, councillors received this overview from Amy Smith, our Senior Community Policy Advisor.
Mayor and councillors, I'm pleased to introduce this report seeking adoption of the annual plan and schedule of fees and charges for 2026-2027. Like many councils across the country, Tasman is navigating a period of significant change. We are responding to new expectations, ongoing sector reforms and increasing financial pressures, all while continuing to support our communities through recovery from the June and July 2025 weather events. These pressures are not abstract. They are being felt across our district, in households and businesses, and in the services our communities rely on every day. This has been a particularly complex and challenging annual plan to develop. Factors including higher interest rates, insurance, asset depreciation, fuel costs, regulatory compliance and maintaining core infrastructure are all putting increased pressure on how we operate. In addition, the Council is managing the financial impacts of the 2025 weather events. Public consultation ran from 2nd of April until 3rd of May and we received nearly 270 submissions. You considered this feedback at the deliberations meeting on 28th of May, with the resulting changes incorporated into the final annual plan and fees and charges before you today. Decisions about rates, fees and charges, service levels and investment all have real consequences. This annual plan reflects the care taken to manage those trade-offs while continuing to meet our obligations and focus on what matters most to the community. To achieve this, the Council has made some difficult decisions, including pausing or reprioritising parts of the work programme, taking a targeted approach to recover costs from the 2025 weather events and debt funding some costs. The consequential rates revenue increase in the annual plan 2026-27 is 9.9%, excluding growth, consistent with what was consulted on. This is made up of 2.3% for the recovery costs of the 2025 weather events, 5% for the Three Waters cost increases, and 2.6% for the cost increases to the rest of council business. Net debt remains within the revenue ratio limit in the financial strategy. I want to emphasise that this budget has been developed under significant constraint. There is limited ability to absorb unexpected costs or new requests, and both financial and programme discipline will be critical over the coming year. Adopting the annual plan and fees and charges today enables the Council to set and collect rates, fund our services and operate lawfully into the next financial year. Thank you.
Amy Smith, Senior Community Policy Advisor. And before the annual plan vote, Mayor Tim King shared his thoughts on the process and the context in which the elected members are working in.
So just before I put the resolution, I'd just like to thank everybody who's been involved. I probably don't agree that there haven't been enough time for questions and answers. There's been an awful lot of questions and answers through the last many months that we've considered the annual plan, both in the lead up to going out with a draft and then subsequently through the consideration of submissions and hearings. People have already touched on the fact we're already well into the workshops in relation to the 10-year plan. And it has been quite interesting to observe that, you know, as we go through each of the individual components, it's actually very hard to dramatically change any one component politically, because while we're offered the opportunities and we're provided the options and, well, you could do this or you could do that or you could stop doing this and it'll save X or it'll save Y, in many cases, the saving of X or Y is relatively tiny in the grand scheme of things. And that is one of the challenges as you work through everything in isolation, and then it all has to come together at the end. And the annual plan is the same. pretty much everyone's mentioned they're not happy with everything that's in it. That is pretty much every single annual plan and 10-year plan in history. Not everybody is happy with everything that's in it. And that would reflect, if you walk out the door and talk to 500 ratepayers, pretty much everyone will be unhappy with something that is either in it or something that isn't in it that they would have liked to see in it. And that is, yeah, the process that we have to work through every time. So, but I would like to say a couple of people have mentioned the way that the debate's been undertaken during the course of both the annual plan and so far during the 10-year plan. I think it has been really collegial. There are some very strong views around this table, as there are in the community, on pretty much every aspect of annual and 10-year planning. But I actually think the way the conversation's been undertaken by and large has been really collegial. People ask good questions, staff provide answers and information, and that is the process that we work through to arrive at these points. So at the end of the day, I will join the club of not happy with everything that's either in or not in the current annual plan, but on balance, I think it does reflect the conversations that have been undertaken, the information that's been provided by staff and the recommendations, and ultimately, it reflects that decision that the council made 3 weeks ago that has now been put into the format that it is today. So, and I know that was by majority, not by either by consensus. It was by majority, and I suspect today's vote will go one way or the other on a majority, and that is democracy. And it's challenging and difficult and dirty and imperfect, but it's the system we run. So with that, I will put the resolution by division. Kelsey.
Councillor Woods.
I am against.
Councillor Walker. Councillor Neubauer.
Against.
Councillor Morgan.
Against.
Councillor McNamara.
Against.
Councillor Maylene.
For.
Councillor Kinnamont.
For.
Councillor Hume.
Against.
Councillor Gully.
For.
Councillor Greening.
Against.
Councillor Fernyhough.
For.
Councillor Ellis.
For.
Councillor Butler.
For.
Deputy Mayor Marrow.
For.
Mayor King.
For.
Carried 9-6.
Following the vote to approve the annual plan, councillors considered the annual plan's rates resolution. In that conversation, Councillor Jo Ellis raised the question of support for ratepayers facing tight budgets.
And what process do they go through to look at getting some sort of relief and help with their rating?
Sure. Through the Mayor. So the first thing that we would always look at when somebody contacts us saying that they're struggling with their rates is whether they can apply for a rates rebate. If someone has applied for a rates rebate in a previous year, they will get automatically sent a letter with a new form to apply for the next year. So we're always tapping into those people that have already applied to say, hey, come in. And we do have a lot of people that feel that pressure, especially as that first rates invoice goes out. And we do have a significant run on both customer service and finance staff time and that particularly those 2-3 weeks after that first rates invoice. If somebody then contacts us outside of that process still saying that they have issues with being able to pay their rates, we try to work with them, understand their personal circumstances, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the rates still need to be paid. So it could be, do we put a payment plan in over 12 months or 18 months or 24 months if they've got behind? We will try to work with people, but sometimes it's just not possible.
Business Services and Rates Manager Margie French answering questions from Councillor Jo Ellis about the support that's available for ratepayers facing financial difficulty. If you live in Motueka or Golden Bay and you've had to book a practical driving test, you'll know there's one big problem. There isn't a single place in the entire Tasman district where you can sit your practical driving test. But the Motueka Community Board believes that needs to change. Deputy Chair Laura Lusk is leading a petition calling for practical driving tests to be available in Motueka.
Back in 2012, Motueka lost the ability to have practical driving tests. What happened was that the central government made a decision to make the restricted tests more complicated and the full tests would be easier. At that point in time, we didn't have roundabouts, we didn't have traffic lights, we didn't pass the test, we didn't get to have tests. However, as I'm sure everybody who goes down High Street knows, we now have roundabouts, we now have traffic lights. So what we need is that we need NZTA to draw a map with a route, which takes us through the roundabouts, through the traffic lights, and a couple of other things. And once that tick is done, then it will be possible for AA licensed and VTNZ licensed testers to be able to hold tests in Motueka.
Getting something like a driver's license, it's an important thing in your life, isn't it? I mean, it represents freedom, but also there's an economic rationale to it too.
Yep, so there's the economic rationale in terms of that for a huge amount of jobs, anyone who's been on trade meal know a huge amount of jobs require a full license or else to be working towards a full license. So that's a huge part. There's also, there's a more complex downstreaming as well. So having a license means that a kid is less likely to get in trouble with the police. So they're a young person who can get in a car and can drive but isn't able to get those licensing is more likely to end up in the judicial system by driving not on their license requirements. So that's one part. Then you've got the other part is that for young people, if they have access to amenities in Motueka, if they can get their license, if they can have something to do in the evening, if they can go to the pool and have a good swim without having to try to get everywhere, then it gives them a reason to want to be here. Because if you don't give services, why would anyone even want to engage? Another part as well is that for people who don't have transport currently or licensing, a lot of folks say that you can take the bus over to Nelson, but the buses don't run on the weekends. The buses, we've got, is it four buses? It's not very many that leave out of Motueka. And the timings don't work well for a lot of people. So it's an access and equity issue that needs to be sorted.
So now we've got to a point where it is going to happen?
We're hopeful. So we've been in contact with NZTA.
Yeah.
And what we found is that they, at the end of this year, NZTA will be doing a assessment of where driver's licensing routes can be added in order to be able to give more rural equity in terms of licensing. So there's two weightings to the decision made by NZTA. So one is making sure that the community itself has the infrastructure that it needs. And we've got great infrastructure. We don't have hill starts, but we've got pretty much everything else. And I'll lay that against Westport, which does have practical driving tests, but does not have traffic lights and does not have roundabouts. So, so there's the one part, which is infrastructure. The other part, which NZTA indicated, is that there needs to be evidence of community desire. And that's where this project comes in, is that our endorsements, which we're hoping to put forward to lobby to NZTA, are aimed towards showing NZTA that there is a desire in Motueka to be able to have a reinstatement of practical driving tests.
And Motueka Community Board Chair Claire Hutt is in no doubt about the support for driver testing in Motueka, as evident in the reaction from people at a recent Motueka market.
We, just in the one morning, Laura and I got 251 signatures, and the conversations were really positive. And I would say that two out of every three people that we spoke to had taken their test in Westport.
And I imagine this work is really important for the people in Golden Bay as well.
Huge issue for Golden Bay as well. And so they're running a petition which is Golden Bay centric. However, the issue is the same. So for our young people or our people who are going for driving tests, they have to go to Nelson and Westport. For the kids coming out of Collingwood, same. They have to go to Nelson and Westport as well.
And Laura Lusk believes the driver testing campaign is proof of the advocacy community boards can undertake on critical issues.
Councillors, they have to think about our whole district. And that's quite a huge ask. It's a big area with a lot of different concerns. But that is where the power of community boards come in, is that we've got our ward, we've got our space, and we can think about that, and we can delve down into what are the issues happening here, and then how do those go out. And then with the Golden Bay Community Board, it's great to have places where we can see these individual communities collaborate, but they can be thought of on a different level. And then when all of these different levels come together, the level of the community board, the level of the council, the level of staff as support, and the level of community as a whole, bringing it together as to what the issues are. When these things can work together, then we can have an amazing project like this one.
That was Laura Lusk, Deputy Chair, Motueka Community Board. She was speaking to the campaign for driver license testing to be made available in Motueka and Golden Bay. And you've been listening to Tasman Report, produced by the Tasman District Council, and I'm John Bullock, Matiwa.
The podcast you just listened to was first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz.